Welcome to the Wise Women Diaries podcast. This is where shame and victimhood die. I am a woman that questions everything, so this podcast is a reflection of that. Here we speak on non-mainstream perspectives, like healing our childhood wounds, learning to trust ourselves, the voice of fear versus intuition, and how children are our teachers. We discuss what it looks like to own your power as a woman and step out of the medical paradigm. That's why I am obsessed with interviewing women who trust their bodies and babies in home birth and free birth, and their wild journey from maiden to mother. Ultimately, this podcast is for women who want to thrive and have inner peace, learning how to take radical responsibility for their life and shed victimhood for good.
Hi, I am Priscilla. I am a mom to five and I'm a wife. We are, I guess you would say, small business owners. We have a few small businesses. So I help my husband run all that. So we're pretty busy over here. We're Christian. So that's like a huge foundation of who we are. My parents split when I was six. Sometimes it's hard to talk about childhood. I feel like I probably disassociated a lot of it. So sometimes I have a hard time recollecting bits and pieces. But I guess overall, when I think back, there was just a lot of disconnection between my mom and I. I saw my dad like every other weekend. So, you know, that's like a story in and of itself. But as far as my relationship with my mom, I feel like that is a huge part of what has shaped me to be who I am today, as much as I didn't love a lot of it and wouldn't wish it upon anyone. You know, I don't want to label my mom as anything, and I want to be honoring to her as I speak about our relationship, but it was very challenging. The best thing I could probably sum it up as I go through my day and I have so many moments with my kids, whether it's we're having a conversation or, you know, there's discipline or there's lessons or we're doing dishes or I'm doing your hair, just whatever. I don't have that like in my repertoire of memory. I don't have memories of like having these connected moments with my mom. I went to private school. She taught there. We were together there. Like, I mean, I remember being with her, but I don't have any of these like motherly moments of memories. And maybe there are some and I've like blocked them out. I don't know, but there wasn't a lot of intimacy there. There was like no intimacy with my mom. And it's hard because growing up, I'm like, okay, she's a single mom. She has to work full time, but obviously, you know, there's plenty of moms that work full time and and are single moms, and they still probably have some connection with their kids. And I didn't have any of that. And I would say, gosh, yeah, there was some verbal abuse, some physical abuse. I would say that the height of my mom remarried when I was 10. And I would say as I turned like 12, 13, it became like our relationship became a lot more tumultuous as I entered my teen years. I hate to get into the details because it's just really hard. It's almost hard to describe because if you've never experienced that kind of person before, it's hard to really wrap your mind around some of the things that I experienced with my mom and the interactions that we had that were just very volatile, very upsetting, you know. And when I think of, you know, not that I've had every moment of my parenting has been perfect. Don't get me wrong. Like I've had some moments with my teen daughters, but I could literally count them on my hand, like how many moments we've had that are like frustrating and we're yelling at it or whatever, you know, I mean, it's less than I can count on one hand, but definitely with my mom, that was a very regular occurrence of just this tumultuous, volatile, these situations, you know, and it was like that. I moved out. How old was I when I moved out? I think when I just turned 19. So
you told me that you're an Enneagram 8 and I am too. And with Enneagram 8s, we are so adverse to control. But if your mother was a narcissist type person, all of that is based on control. So how did that look? As she's your mom, but your personality is like, do not control me.
How did that look? It was really challenging because I don't know if I was always a controlling person or if that developed like later on, because I was trying to like, you know, in fear and trying to fix things. So, and I don't know, I even with my kids, I'm not this overly controlling person. I think when I think of controlling, I just want like safety and security. You know, I don't necessarily feel like I need to control every move everyone makes. With my mom, yeah. So in my teen years, I would happily engage in the conflict that she would bring about. You know, I definitely didn't like crawl under a rock and just take it. So that's what made it so. And so let me give you an example. There'd be times where it's like, hey, after school, can I go hang out with my friends? And she would say, yes, as long as your room is clean. So I'm like, I would clean my room the day before that's all supposed to happen. And then in the morning of like that day that is supposed to go down, she would come in my room and she would just say, oh, you can't go out today. And I'm like, wait a minute, you just told me that if I know, but now I'm saying no, but you said, you know. And then it was like, oh, now you're disrespecting me. And now So my mom loved to pick fights. She loved to stir up chaos and drama. And then it shaped this picture of, she shaped this picture of me to my family, my stepdad, other people, is that I was this really out of control teenager that picked fights with her about everything. But it was constant, like, She can turn on a dime too. You know, we could be having a bad day and like she would go to bat for me, you know, if like I had an issue with a teacher or a friend, but then she would use that against me like the next week. I'd be frustrated. We'd be frustrated. I was like, oh, this is why no one likes you. This is why, you know. So it was just, it's hard to even describe the ups and downs of, you know, there were really no ups, but you know, best to just try to keep her happy all the time. Like I learned to like, I'm really good at like reading the room and, and reading people's, I don't know, body language and, you know, the things that they say. I'm constantly analyzing my situations, you know, because you're always like, oh, okay, I got to wait till so-and-so is in a good mood or a bad mood, or, you know, not touch them while they're in a bad mood or whatever. So I became really, I became better at that. Just knowing like I got to catch her in a good mood, you know? So it's hard because it's like I want to be careful how I still want to like honor my mom and how I talk about her. We are estranged today. I don't have a relationship with her at all as of the last 3.5 years. You know, I guess better like in my early 20s, like when I started having kids, you know, it got better. But yeah, it was a lot. And I think it was because, you know, like my mom is also in the church. My mom is a Bible study leader. Like she does care about how she is perceived by certain people. So, you know, being a doting mother and grandmother is looks good for her. So I think, you know, those people want attention. They want, you know, they want supply and they want, you know, so getting that from grandkids is, I think she wanted that. So yeah, so it was better. I don't even say better, but manageable, I guess, a little bit. And then there were definitely some low lows. There were some times we didn't talk a whole lot because it just got to be, you know, there were things that just became unhinged. And, you know, so I met my husband when I was 18. I think he also came from a very broken home. His biological father left when he was 6, left with a mistress, left his mom with 4 boys. And then she married someone when he was also 10. And then that guy adopted all the boys. And he never really had like a really close relationship with, he was a steady presence, but they didn't have like a very close relationship. So I love my husband very much. He loves me very much, but it definitely, I think we were definitely looking to mend our broken places when we met. I was only 18 and he was 22 and we were just very broken. Like we weren't walking with the Lord then. we just had a lot of wounds that needed to be licked, for lack of a better term. And I think we were like happy to do that for each other, you know, we're just like, oh, here, I'll help you, you help me, or whatever. But yeah, no, and we've almost been married 19 years. And like, obviously, our relationship's evolved a lot. And I am still like very happily married. Like, he is my best friend, you know, and God can take any relationship, any mess, and totally turn it into a message. And I totally give him all the credit for that. But so we got married, or we were together, we got engaged like Christmas of 2004. And then I found out I was pregnant like March, April 2005. And we both come from like very conservative Christian homes, right? So, well, Christian in name, right? So, and it's crazy because of my experience with my mom. Well, I don't even because of that, but also because of that, I guess. I couldn't wait to be a mom. Like, I couldn't wait to get married and have a family of my own. And I just was like, I don't want any of this. I want so deeply to have like a wonderful relationship with my kids. Like this, I saw what other kids had with their parents, and I wanted that so bad, even if it meant I'm only going to experience that on the other side of it, right? Like, I'm never going to have that per se with my own mom, but I know that I can have that with my kids, you know. So when I found out I was pregnant, though, I was just like, we were still kids, essentially. Like, we didn't have our big kid jobs. Like, neither, like, he had finished college, but he hadn't found a job in his field yet. And he was like, I don't know, working at, where was he working? Like a sign shop or something, doing graphics. And I was working at a private Christian school, not the most ideal place to be pregnant out of wedlock, you know? And so, yeah, that was like, and it was like so much shame. I think that's something huge I've had to work through in my life, but just like the amount of shame that you feel in that moment of just like, oh my gosh, you know? So I actually made an appointment to have an abortion, and I knew I was not built to have an abortion, but like logistically, I saw no other way. I just am like, we can't support ourselves. Our parents are going to murder us. Like, we're going to have so much shame. It's going to like bury me. I can't even take care of myself. I feel like a mess. How am I going to take care of another human? So anyways, we went to like, my husband necessarily wasn't for it. He was just like, I don't want to do that, but like, I will support you in, you know, what you decide. Like, I don't think he wanted to be the person to talk me out of that. And I think I just seem so, this is what we're doing. It wasn't even like, I'm asking your opinion, you know? And I was just like, I was just blinded by fear. I was just so blinded by fear of everything. So anyways, we made the appointment, we went in for the appointment, and they took me back and they have you fill out all the paperwork. And then at the top of the paper, they had me write, "This abortion is my choice." And I just paused and I realized like, oh my gosh, like I cannot do this. Like, I can't, like, I will never forgive myself. I will never forgive myself for doing this. And so I came out and I was hysterically crying and I told him I can't do it. And he's crying. And then we jumped in the car and we like went to Vegas, and I called my parents like halfway there. I'm like, "Hey, I'm pregnant, but it's cool. I'm getting married. It's all good." And they were like, "Oh my gosh, no, just come home. We'll give you a wedding, you know?" So anyways, I came home, we planned our wedding in like 3 weeks, and we like got married in June, had her in December. And clearly I didn't understand how the whole like get pregnant thing works, because I had her and then 5 months later I was pregnant again. And I'm like, oh my gosh, what happened? So my older two are like 14 months apart, right? But like, oh my gosh, like I look back and it's so crazy. I guess, I'm sure women have different moments like this, but, you know, so many people want like, oh, I go to school, I get my job, I get married, we wait 5 years, we have our baby. Like, honestly, there's no perfect time to have children. I mean, obviously, like being part of like the Christian culture and not married, that's like the least ideal time to get pregnant. But you know, it feels so right here in your face. You're so blinded by, you know, all these thoughts. And it's like in 5 years, 10 years, like all those little fears are like not even a blip on the radar. You know, I mean, it's just so, and it's just, I can't even describe like what a blessing my kids are. And just, I mean, I don't think there was like a single day the first year of my daughter's life that I didn't look at her and cry and think like, oh my gosh, she almost wasn't here, you know, and like what an incredible blessing she is. And just, oh man, like all the things you're worried about, they're just so minuscule compared to this incredible little life I brought into the world.
Being in the Christian culture and getting pregnant before marriage and the shame, when does the shame kind of lift? Is it immediately after you get married or after the baby's born, or where is it?
Oh, I would love to say it was after I got married or when the baby's born, but you know what? That shame did not live for a long time. I feel like the shame lived in my bones, because even when I got pregnant a second time, I still felt that way. Like, I think I still, like, it was so deep and rooted in my heart and rooted in my soul that it really never did lift. Like, even, and you know, it's after we got married, you know, we got married in June. So that we were at a 4th of July party. We're already married. At this point, like my grandma, my mom's mom, she was so terrified to, I don't know if terrified the right word, but she did not want me to tell people I was pregnant. She did not want me to, like, she's like, we're just going to tell everybody you had a preemie. And looking back, I was so like annoyed by that. But at the same time, I know where she was coming from, because she got pregnant at 15. And I think she was trying to, she didn't want me to deal with what she had dealt with. While I know she didn't really care per se, like, I don't think she was judging me or upset with me or anything like that. I think she was trying to keep me from feeling the things and feeling the shame that she felt, but it honestly just heaped it on more, that it was like, keep this hidden, keep this hidden, keep this hidden until the right time. And it's crazy because nobody really cares. Even the private school at the time I worked for, there, like a lot of the parents, they were like, I heard you can't go on the, because I was doing daycare and they were like going on a trip to Disney. I'm like, I heard you can't go on the rides. Are you pregnant? I'm like, yeah, but I'm not really supposed to tell anyone. They're like, oh, we don't care. You know, like, and it's crazy because I did get, even in the Christian culture, like more of a positive response from people. But I think there's just, yeah, that stigma, you know, obviously. Yeah. And it's wild because it's not even so much like, oh, you were having sex before marriage. It's like you got pregnant. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, you probably know, like, that's happening. But then it was like, oh, you made a whoops. I don't know. So yeah, the shame did not lift for a long time, because even with all my subsequent pregnancies, I still felt that way. I was like, I got pregnant with my last at 34. Actually, my last two, I would say my last three, we were actually like intentional about like, okay, if it happens, it happens. We weren't like being super careful, right? And even though it was kind of like planning and we've been married a long time, it's okay now, you know, I still felt that way. I still felt that way. When I found out I was pregnant with my last, I had horrible anxiety for like the whole week. And it was crazy. In my head, I could say, why do I feel this way? It's going to be fine. I couldn't rationalize in my mind. I couldn't rationalize my way out of that, you know? So, and I got pregnant with him. So he'll be 4 actually next week. And like I said, I became estranged from my mom 3.5 years ago. So shortly after he was born, when that happened, I went to therapy and I did EMDR. I'm not sure mm-hmm. how many people are familiar with that, but, I did EMDR, and the first thing I worked through was shame. You know, and I feel like we are done having kids, but I know in my soul, like if I got pregnant tomorrow, I would not experience that the way that I did before. Cause I've already had other experiences where I'm like, oh, this would have made me feel this way. And it doesn't now. So I'm sad I didn't do that a long time ago, but it is what it is. And yeah. So that was really when shame started to lift, is going through that process of EMDR. Honestly, that was really helpful.
Thanks for speaking to that, because I haven't had this level of a conversation before about this topic. And it goes to show that the body keeps the score, you know?
Yeah, it really does. It really does. So I loved EMDR. I know there's a lot of, even in the Christian world, they're kind of like weirded out by some of that stuff, but you know, God created the mind and it's so intricate and it is so, I believe that wholeheartedly. Autoimmune and all those things, like when you are holding on to all that, it definitely affects you. So yeah, I was really grateful to go through that process. And yeah, becoming a mom at a young age was challenging, but in an instant, like literally the minute she was, you know, like earthside and out, it was a love that I really can't even put into words. And in that moment, I knew like I would, you know, because growing up, my biggest fear was having a relationship with my kids that my mom had with me. And even though I'm like, I can't even fathom treating my kids the same way, I just, you know, things get passed along, you know? And so that was terrifying. But, you know, I definitely haven't been the perfect parent, but my heart has always been to like seek the Lord and go to his word for counsel. I mean, it is all in there. Like the Bible truly addresses it all. And, you know, and it also says there's wisdom in a multitude of counsel. And I'm so grateful for like the people that the Lord has placed in my life. Like I go to people to hold me accountable as a mother, and I go to people to hold me accountable as a wife, and to, you know, learn from people that have gone before me. Cause like I said, we don't have a playbook on parenting. I mean, I know no one does, but a lot of people are inspired by their parents, you know, there wasn't really much there to be inspired by. So yeah, I'm really grateful, you know, and as we've been entering, you know, I know a lot of people enter the teen years, like, oh, the teen years. And it sucks because I'm definitely not like our words hold a lot of power person. I mean, I think that's true to some degree, but I don't want to give it too much credit, you know, but I think a mindset, if you go into it like, oh, these teen years are going to suck, like you're kind of always looking for the suck, you know, where I'm like, oh man, this is like so fun. Like I love having teen girls, and my son is a teen too, you know, and I love having teens. And is it challenging? Yes. But I also feel like we've curated a life that's kept out a lot of the challenges that some parents are dealing with these days. You know, I mean, the culture is going to hell in a handbasket. I will never let my kids touch a public school. I am super careful who I allow to like influence their life. And they're not sheltered. Like we talk about the things going on in the world. We talk about sex, we talk about marriage, we talk about, you know, what's happening in the culture and, you know, and all those things. They have jobs outside the home and they're making decisions for the future. And, you know, but at the same time, you know, we've been careful, you know, who we allow to like speak into our kids' lives and, you know, just try to be really intentional about these years, you know, because from like 16 to like, I don't know what, 30. I mean, you're really laying the foundation. Not that you can't make changes later on, but you're making a lot of decisions that can affect you for decades to come, you know? And so we want to make sure we really intentionally like walk with our kids through that. That is something I am really passionate about. I see a lot of parents become very hands-off during this time. And, you know, we know young adults that are still at home too. And I think on the one hand, they want to kind of control aspects of their lives, but then not really help them navigate like these really important decisions and just hope that they figure it out, you know? It's like, so that's a bummer. But
how do you feel like you are fostering that connection in your house compared to other homes? How do you feel like that's happening in your home?
We've fostered a pretty deep connection with our kids by being really open with them. We're really open about, I mean, in an appropriate way, right? We talk openly about sex, you know, we talk openly about not like our own personal sex life, but just, you know, sex is old. We talk to other young people and it's like, have you ever talked to your parents about sex? And they're like, absolutely not, you know? But it's like, they're going to get their information from somewhere, you know? We've just, I think from a really young age, not just in their teen years, have been like, hey, we're not ashamed, or we're not going to make you feel ashamed for having questions that you have or having thoughts that you have. Or, you know, I have one daughter that's 10 and she will come and she's like, I don't really know if I'm supposed to say this, or I don't know if I'm supposed to tell you this, but I'm just going to tell you this, you know? And I'm like, okay. And so like, we don't make them feel like they have to censor themselves around us. And we've also been, I think this is huge in parenting, but like really open with our kids about the mistakes that we've made. We're not, you know, ashamed to tell them about the mistakes that we've made, you know? We're also not afraid to tell them, or go to them and ask for forgiveness and admit that we've sinned against them, or we've, you know, if we've done something to our kid, or we handled something poorly or whatever, like we go to our kids and say like, hey, we didn't handle this right, and we're sorry. And, you know, I think that's huge. The whole, you know, repair and reconciling with your kids is huge, huge, huge. Like, I know that that is something like I literally never experienced with my parent. There was no admitting their faults whatsoever. So, you know, letting our kids see that we are not perfect people and we've made a lot of mistakes, and we talk to them about like, and here's how those mistakes have impacted us. Because even from our kids' perspective, they're like, man, our life looks pretty good. You know, like, it's like, yeah, but you know, it took a lot to get here. You know, it took a lot of making a lot of dumb decisions and a lot of hard work to come back from those dumb decisions, you know, to get here. So it's like, hey, if we can help you make better decisions about like how you decide on, you know, a mate, how you decide and how you navigate dating and courtship, how you navigate choosing a profession, what school you're going to go to, how you choose to save, spend, give your money, how you choose to invest in the local church. Like, you know, and I am very firm about, you know, hey, you live in our home. You're going to do things the way that we want you to do them. If you don't want to do that, that is okay. We love you. We will be there for you. You can come over here and have dinner anytime. But like, we set up things the way that we set them up because we know it's what's best. And if you want to live here rent-free and you want to build your life under this umbrella, then you're going to do certain things the way that we want them done. And I know, you know, a lot of times like, oh, my kid's an adult, I'm going to let him do whatever. It's like, yeah, but you're paying for everything. So there's something to be said about when you're paying their way.
Yeah, it's such a good point to make because my husband and I, we don't have kids yet. And so we've had years of conversation about so many things. And I was one of six kids and he was one of two. And still, I was handed my first car at 16. And I promised my mom I would make payments and I didn't. And she let it ride. I mean, she was in grief. We lost our dad. It's a whole story. But my husband was given like everything. And we had the conversation of what did that do for us? We each had teenage jobs, but we were given a lot. And we weren't taught about taxes or how to invest or nothing. And we're like, okay, we were given so much stuff. And then we were shoved out into the real world at some point in our 20s. And we're like, but what? Eventually we learned, right? You eventually learn it. But if you are handing things to teenagers or young adults, my husband and I's conversation was just like, but how did that help us? And we cannot think of one reason of how it helped us. So now we're like, yeah, just by reflecting on, you know, our own experience, we are kind of getting a structure on how we want that to be with our future kids.
Yeah. So yeah, we came from like, we were a mess financially. You know, I can literally remember I got my first job at 15 and a half and I could not wait to get my paycheck, and I cashed it and I blew it on a pair of Guess jeans. Like, I was like, yes, I'm gonna go, you know, and that's so crazy. But like, even then my parents were like, okay, you have a job, you have a paycheck, whatever, you know. I mean, they were like not intentional in quite a few things, but you know, but then It was, yeah, they handed me a car, and then it was like, okay, make payments. It's like, but I had a year and a half before I ever got that car. They could have been like, hey, because you live here, we're going to force you to save some of that money. I would say in this, like, you really do have to start them young. Start your kids young, give them opportunities to earn some money when they're younger, because at a very young age, my kids were spending, saving, giving. And when they got quite a bit in their little jar, we'd go to the bank and they would put some in the bank, you know? And like my 18-year-old, who's not even graduated yet, has a good chunk of change that she has invested. And, you know, she, you know, hopefully will buy her first home or first investment property sometime in the next few years, you know? And I think, you know, financially, like the financial stuff, that touches my soul way down deep. We're not, I won't say we're like 100% Dave Ramsey like we used to be. We've gotten, you know, we don't follow his principles exactly, but we did for a time, and that dug us out of a huge hole. And you know, we for sure we're not going to allow our kids to go down that path. And so now I think that by the time they're hitting their teen years, they have seen like, okay, you've always had money to spend and to blow, you know, within reason, and you have like a good chunk of savings. And maybe they don't feel the weight of how cool that is now, but like as they hit their, when they get, you know, they're in their 20s, and if they're anything like a lot of people in their mid-20s, they don't have a pot to piss in, you know. I'm like, hey, you're gonna have like, you know, $60,000 or $70,000 saved. Like that's gonna feel pretty good, you know, in your mid-20s. Maybe even more than that, who knows? You know, so I think it is a fine line, because I do have really good kids. They're very responsible. They're a huge blessing, and you want to bless them. You want to bless them. And so you want, part of you wants to just like, oh, you're such little angels, have it all, you know? But one, I don't know if anybody's noticed the price of things lately, but I'm like to the point where I'm like, oh man, we literally can't afford everything. So we're just trying to like structure things in a way that they are easing into adulthood, I guess. You know, so we did buy a car for like our, 'cause we, you know, we have three back to back that are going to be driving, right? Two are already driving and one's going to get their permit this year. So I'm going to have three kids on my insurance. That is very expensive. And so as far as the car thing goes, we bought a car. I kind of just assumed they would all kind of drive it and then buy their own at some point. Well, my oldest was like, I want this car, so I'll pay you for it. So she paid half. She just finished paying us half for it. And then so we bought like a little jalopy for, you know, my other daughter. I'm like, here's a jalopy. You know, we literally spent $3,500. I'm like, you can keep saving for like your big girl car and drive the jalopy. And then by the time I think she can buy her own car, my son will be in the jalopy, right? So that he can drive the jalopy while he saves. So yeah, I think we've taken principles obviously that other people teach, but then, you know, molding it to your own family. And we have, again, these open conversations with our kids about like, what is fair? What is reasonable for us to ask of you? You know, sadly, that car that my daughter just bought, it only has 68,000 miles, but the engine literally went out last week. And we told her as soon as she paid it off, the maintenance is all on her. Well, hello, a $7,000 bill as an 18-year-old is kind of a lot. So we're like, hey, as much as this sucks, this is adulthood, and we will take on part of it. We're going to help you, but you're going to have to like work a little bit extra. So, and she was like, you know what? That's fair. And so we're working with her to make it happen. So I think again, one thing that really frustrated me as a teen is like, there was no consistency. There was no like, this is how we do things, and you know, this is how we do things. These are our family values. These are this. It was just like up, down, up, down, up, down. This is okay. This is not okay. This is okay today. This is not okay tomorrow, you know? And so that's the thing, is we've tried to like, I think being consistent with your kids and like build you know, your rapport with them and builds trust, and like you're consistent in, you know, I don't know, and all the things, discipline and your values and all that. So
That's how respect is earned, though, too, is that consistency, because that is safety. and trust, consistency, that up and down inconsistency is hypervigilance, and you can't trust someone like that. And so what I'm hearing from you is you and your husband really have created culture within your own home. And I use that word culture because I saw this on an Instagram reel of this woman saying, if you're trying to find a romantic partner, you're really finding someone that you can create your own culture with within your home. And you and your husband are intentionally create this culture within your home. And you're part of a bigger culture, like with your church community, but your home culture has been shaped so intentionally. And that's amazing.
Yeah. You know, it's hard finding that balance of like, I don't want to overthink every single little thing, but all at the same time, like, I don't want to just be whatever, you know, or, apathetic to things that, like, you know, even helping them navigate conflicts in friendship or having them, you know, just navigate decisions. So I don't want to be apathetic. So yeah, finding that balance, walking with them through that.
What do you want to say about schooling? Because you homeschool and you told me you're pretty passionate about your kids not choosing to go to college, although obviously you know that they will choose whatever they want to choose, but that's a part of your conversation in your home.
Yeah, I love homeschool. I never tell people I'm like the model homeschool parent, because honestly, like, if we could just like eat donuts and go to the beach every day, like, that would be my main homeschool situation. Like, I want my kids to love to learn, you know, and feel like they have that space to pursue different things. I mean, literally just the other day, my son's like, I want to learn to put together computers and build computers from scratch. And I'm like, okay. And we have the freedom to do that, you know? And both of my daughters work at Chick-fil-A and they're like working themselves up the ladder. I want them to have that freedom to pursue those things. I don't want to say I'm like passionate about not going to college. You know, I think I'll probably feel differently about my son versus my daughter. Like, if he wants to go, I'm not going to say, hey, you're a boy, you have to go. But I think that, you know, my daughters really do want to like get married and have a family. Like, I just don't see the need for them to go spend $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 to get a degree they might use for a couple of years. And who knows when they're going to meet their mate, but I'm like, choose something that, you know, you can do even maybe when you're a mom, that you can work into your life, like not a 9-to-5. If you know that's not where you want to be, then don't set your life, like, begin with the end in mind. Make choices now that will suit your life in 10 years, you know, and won't be like, oh, why did I waste all this time? Or why did I waste all this money? You know? So I'm not like super adamant. Like, my daughter, the second one, for a little while thought she wanted to be a nurse. And I'm like, I will match your effort. So, cause she already like doesn't love schoolwork. And I'm like, well, I don't know what you think going to nursing school is going to be like, but it's not going to be a walk in the park. So, but I'm like, hey, like, we'll start with community college. If you're like, what is the word I'm looking for? But, like, pounding out the work, then I'll meet you there. I'll pay for it. Like, I will match your efforts, you know? So that's just what we've told them. And, you know, I just think I think the tide is turning on the whole college conversation, because I don't know how old you are. I'm 38, but like, definitely when I finished high school, it like, when you're in high school, it's like, everybody goes to college. You're going to college. This is what you're doing. You're going to college, you know? And like, I think that conversation as a whole is shifting, you know, thankfully. But, yeah, so I'm just, I, like I said, I'm like, if you, you know, I don't necessarily want them just sitting around waiting for Prince Charming. But at the same time, there's a lot of creative ways you can make a decent income, you know?
I'm 35. A lot of us in our generation, honestly, have awoken to the college scam. And I have a degree. I have a degree that I've never used in my life. I'm a photographer. I don't need a degree to be a photographer. But I have a lot of friends. And this is why I brought this up with you is because this just needs to be a conversation with young adults, that this is the reality that 30-year-olds are living through. Females in their 30s are living through going through medical school, racking up this insane bill of debt, or physician's assistant school, whatever it is. I have friends that are living this, where they have this insane debt. and they know they want to be a mom. And then as soon as they're done with school, they might work for 1 or 2 years. Then they become a mom. And they have to go back to work without any choice, without any agency, because they have to go to work to pay those student loans. And they do not have a choice whether they want to stay home or go to work. It is not a power of agency thing because they are in debt. And this is the reality of women in their 30s in this US society right now, is they put off being a mother because of schooling, and that's fine. But then they are sitting with this heavy pressure of not being able to stay home, even if they want to. And that's heavy.
Yeah. And so that's definitely, you know, how we've framed that conversation with our girls of like, hey, like, obviously I'm totally like a proponent of being a stay-at-home mom and staying home with your kids. And even if I know it's, everyone's like, that's almost impossible to do these days. It's like, listen, we lived in basically a shack for the first few years of our marriage. It was that important for me to be home with my kids, you know? And I did a lot of things in the meantime. Like, I had an eBay store, I had garage sales, I had whatever I could to bring in extra money. I'm like, you can bring in extra money. Now, I'm not bringing in like a full-blown salary, but yeah, I just, you know, and we have a lot of conversations around just, when we see something, I'm like, hey, look at this model, right? Look at this model here. And what are your thoughts on that? You know, and I have, a brother-in-law, he works for the banking industry and he didn't go in with a degree. And then they paid for him to go through all the schooling. I'm like, look at that. Like, there's like, they paid for it, you know, like he was making great money before, and he'll be making better money after, but it's just not the end all be all anymore. And there's so many other options. Even if you want a degree, there's so many other options than just jumping in right after high school and spending all this money, whether it's you get loans or it's your parents' money, you know, because I think some people are like, well, I don't have to go into debt for it. It's like, okay, but that's still like a good chunk of your time to like give up, you know? And a lot of people are like, well, I want the college experience. I'm like, okay. You know, I tell my girls, I'm like, just make friends with people that are in college and you can go experience it over, you know, for free with them. You don't have to go there. But, so yeah, I think we've had a lot of conversation, and they know we're not like anti, but we're also just like, if they're like, hey, we want an underwater basket weaving degree, so we're going to go to college. I'm like, no. That's not happening. Like, you know, we're going for gender studies. I'd be like, no, also not happening, you know, like that's not lucrative. So, I think just being, my husband has an art degree, right? And like, he washed windows and he sells automotive equipment and I'm in real estate. Like there's just no need for the art degree thing. But, yeah. It's just, I'm like, yeah. No. So we were paying off his loans till 2015. And that like, that's, we don't want to see that for them. You know, 2015, we paid off his loans. I was really sad. I thought that like the heavens were going to open up and like confetti was going to fall down. But none of that happened, everyone. If you're waiting for that, when you pay off the loans, it doesn't, you know, but I'm like, dang, like what could we have done with that money? You know, what could we have, like, how could we have invested that and had so much more? And hindsight, but you know, but it's, again, it was just like, a lot of help navigating those decisions in like a very common sense way, you know.
Maybe this way of handling money and college and not knowing how to invest is where hopefully the next generation will improve if families like yours are setting these kids up for success, you know. I'm really excited to see this. And they're going to be making mistakes in their life. I'm not saying like, oh, they're going to do everything right. No, like, because they have to learn their life lessons still.
Yeah. We tell our kids, I'm like, listen, trials and tribulations are going to come, right? The Bible promises that. Like, I don't know why some people think Jesus is like the life fix all, the path to like health, wealth, and happiness. Like, all the disciples were basically martyred, so it didn't work out for them that way. So like, we're promised trials and tribulations in this life, right? Like, but we don't need to add to them. I think people make these really stupid decisions and it's like, oh, this is a trial. It's like, no, you're an idiot. You know, like we don't have to, we don't have to add to it. So again, we're not like, I'm not trying to save my kids from every horrible thing that's going to come their way, because there's just so many things that are out of our control. Like you can have health things, you can have, you know, like car accidents or losing a family member. Like there's all kinds of things that can happen. You get fired from your job, whatever. Like you can't help that. But there are things like, I'm like, let's not add to the burden of this, the life's challenges by making poor decisions, you know? So I don't know. We really try to like say things, not just like, we don't want to like over spiritualize things that are kids, you know, because I think there's like, we have to bring that common sense into it too, where it's like, hey, like these, you know, like this is why we say what we say, you know, and at some point, yeah, they are going to make their own decisions. And when I said earlier, like trying to control things, it's just, you know, it's, if they were going to say like, okay, we're going to live at home for free, but we're going to take out $100,000 in student loans to go to UCLA, I'd be like, no, I'm not supporting that. You can do that, but you got to go live somewhere else, you know? So I think it's like, hey, as long as you stay within the bounds of what we believe is like secure and wise, then we will continue to pay part of your way. Like, you know, they pay some of their own bills, but you know, and so just navigating it like, and, but none of it's ever been a surprise to them. I think keeping the conversation lines open from the time that they're very young, you know, we don't spring anything on them when they're like, I'm getting ready to go to college. And we're like, no, you're not, you know? So we've had these conversations for years, all of them, you know. You know, dating, that's another big conversation, right? Like navigating dating. If they like, they never thought like, oh, I'm going to turn 16 or I'm going to turn 18. I can start dating around. They know that's not happening. So that's going to happen in a way that probably looks very different from the rest of the world, you know? But it's easy to look around and see, like, I don't want to be part of what our culture defines as normal. You know, it's not, I don't see it working out for most people. You know, I think it behooves our kids to like, and then we show them that we're like, hey, like, this is what these people are dating the way the world, like, and like, what does that look like? Yeah, that looks, not fun, you know, or that looks really intense, or that looks draining, you know, not to say that like it doesn't work out in the end, but like even like we even talk about like our early dating years, I'm like, man, when I look back, like we should not have gotten married. I mean, praise God we did. Like he can, and I was like, it's hard to even have those conversations because I'm like, man, God has totally stepped in and done a work in my heart and done a work in your dad's heart. And like by his grace, like we are still married and we have a healthy, thriving, happy marriage. But like, man, we had to go through some hard stuff to get here. And I'm like, marriage is already going to be challenging. All having kids is challenging. You don't have to add to it. You know, like do as much as it depends on you, like to not bring chaos into your life, to, you know, bring peace to things. But, you know, I think that's like, just being really open about and honest about like our own hardships and like, hey, like, and looking at the rest of the way the world is doing things, like, does that look attractive, you know, and where is that getting them, you know?
That's really cool. You're just offering points of reflection for your kids.
Yeah. For the most part, they're receptive, you know, like I'm great. We do try to approach parenting with humility of not like we have all the answers. We know what's right. You're an idiot. You have no idea what the world is like. We really don't try to approach it like that. You know, it's like, hey, this is what we've seen. You're welcome to take a look as well. This is what we've experienced. And because this is what we experienced, like, this is how we're going to navigate this. So also, I have a really wonderful relationship with my dad. My dad is amazing. I just want to put that out there. But so when I say like my mom married my stepdad and I lived with them most of the time. So, but yeah, there definitely wasn't like a humble approach to parenting, which is really, I guess I feel like I'm going to segue here for a minute, but like, that's really challenging when you're brought up in a Christian home, right? Because like the whole foundation of like the whole foundation of the gospel is like God sent his son to come and live as a man on earth. Like he, like the king of the universe humbled himself to the point of like death on a cross, right? To die for the sins of man. He lived a perfect life. He died a death he did not deserve, and then rose again and ascended into heaven, right? Like the whole premise of Christianity is the king of the universe humbled himself, you know, and repenting and putting your faith in Christ. Like that does not happen without humility. And so when you're living in a home that like, you have to believe this, you have to go to church, you have to, you know, but then also like that whole concept is like non-existent from your parent-child relationship and growing up, that is really hard to like reconcile. And so like I did not even have a right view of God until my early 20s, you know, because I'm like, I don't understand. These are not computing. These are not mixing together for me, you know? And so it wasn't until my early 20s I really understood like, or started to understand, we'll never fully understand God, but like the God of the universe and his plan for mankind and the gospel and, you know, and really, really started walking with the Lord in my early 20s, you know? That's challenging. I don't know. I don't think you can have a healthy relationship with your kids, really with anyone, to be honest, I guess in marriage and parent, like those are your closest relationships. So like healthy marriage, healthy parenting without like humility, you know, and not witnessing that, but then also trying to reconcile, like we're all supposed to live in this way. Like that was, you know, but praise God that he like connected those dots for me, like in my early 20s, because like, wow, like when you understand grace, when you understand like what Christ has done for you, like and you see like who you are in front of a holy God, it is just like, oh my gosh, you know, it just brings you to your knees. Like it really does. It's just like, man, Lord, like I exist to bring you glory. Like I exist to bring you glory. And I think that's what I'm passionate about. I know it's like a hard time. Like, how do we get to, like, there's all these things, right? But like, and I don't do it perfectly in any realm of my life, but like, yeah, at the end of the day, like when we get to heaven, like he says, well done, good and faithful servant. Like, you know, Lord, like, I just hope that, and like, what a better way to like bring God glory than like you entrusted me with these little human beings to raise up in the ways of the Lord. And I don't know what they're, you know, they get to make their own life and their own decisions one day, but like, you know, they're somewhat like a product of, and it's hard because the Bible says like train up a child in the way he will go, or train up a child in the way he'll go, and when he's older, he won't depart from it, right? I think something like that. I'm messing it up, I'm sure. But, you know, they may go off and be rebellious for a time, and they may go out and like, you know, you know, try to figure out like, oh, do I want to be part of the world or not? I think like we've really tried to be like, hey, this is the world. Does that look attractive to you? And hey, we're trying to raise you in the ways of the Lord with, you know, with our very finite minds and finite emotions and our limited capacities as human beings. Like we're, and just know we're on the struggle bus, kids. Like we are, but like, you know, and just like, hey, we want, I think a lot of people think that the Christian life is so restrictive, but like the Lord put things in place for a reason, you know what I mean? And so we want them to see like the attractiveness of like living within the bounds of like God's word, you know, when it comes to every aspect of their life, really.